And I mean, we're live.
Fahrenheit scale is obviously superior.
I mean, it's much more relatable from a human standpoint.
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, zero Fahrenheit is really damn cold.
Yep.
And 100 Fahrenheit is really damn hot. Whereas Celsius, zero Celsius is like mildly chilly, and 100 is dead. And for Kelvin, zero is dead, and 100 is also dead.
Yeah, yeah. Depending on what you are.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not a tardigrade...
Yeah, I mean, obviously. I mean, water bears cheat, but if you don't count them...
Hey, and welcome to an episode of Crippled System, episode 320. My name is Andy.
I'm Dan.
I'm Nathan.
And I'm Dave.
How come more sports teams don't have the tardigrade as their mascot? Because those things are fucking unkillable and adorable.
They have really good lawyers.
I don't know. The Washington football team does not have a nickname yet. You can suggest that.
The Washington tardigrades?
Yeah, yeah, but the problem is I still hate their owner, and it would irritate me if they had a good team name.
My favorite suggestion, though, so far I've heard, is the Washington Department of Football.
Oh my god! Wait a second.
What?
I don't know if I'm on a parody website or not. I don't think I'm on.
This is 2020. This is 2020. How can you tell the difference?
This is from September 5th of this year, and it says during a. It says the pentagram, not the Pentagon. Is the pentagram an actual thing, like with the Pentagon, or is this just a tip off that this is a parody? Anyway, a thing was claiming that the Space Force mascot was going to be the tardigrade.
Oh, okay.
This is a military parody website. Yes, the Duffel Blog, first and only parody news organization. This was fascinating listening.
Yep. Hey.
Content.
Yep.
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll be here next week.
And the Muse music plays.
Yeah. So do you? The last time we podcast was before Doomsday.
Was it?
Yeah,
I don't remember when the last time we elected. I mean, podcasted was
probably
was
2012,
October?
I guess.
It was before the election.
Yeah.
So.
Been a while.
Yep.
I mean, in fairness, the election is still ongoing because we haven't really determined the king yet.
Very true.
I mean, the other way of looking at it is he's lost for the what is it, David? 14th time now. 35th, depends on which 39th. Level of courts you count.
Yeah,
I like this week where he paid like $3 million to give Biden 100 more votes in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
It was $34,500 per vote.
Yeah,
I mean,
money created, well spent.
Yeah, I mean, created a few jobs in Wisconsin for a week. It was good.
Yeah.
50 more days.
Yeah, when do the electors vote?
The 14th.
Yeah, okay. 14th of December. Yeah. So we'll know if
it's the big day.
Yeah. I mean, we only made partial decisions.
I mean, I think the 6th. The 6th is, I think, the deadline for everything to be certified.
Well, if so, yeah, because if you don't have electors set by the 8th, Congress can refuse to seat them or something like that. And so all the states say they'll have them in by the 6th to avoid that. Because
yeah, I mean, the 6th is effectively the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably.
I mean,
because technically the electors can do whatever the fuck they want.
That's true.
But I mean, after the 6th, you're basically trying to bribe, cajole, or threaten people who were literally specifically chosen by either the Biden campaign itself or the local Democratic parties in all of the states with the only job to go and vote for Joe Biden.
Yeah, I mean, given past history, there's going to be at least one person voting for John Edwards.
Yeah. Also, what fucking year is this? Like, are you kidding me? Until those goddamn electors elect, I ain't counting no chickens.
Yeah.
Now, did you see that the president called the Secretary of State of Georgia, a person of his own political party, an enemy of the state? Or, not sorry, an enemy of the people.
Yeah. I saw that one of Trump's lawyers in a post on Parler said that Trump should do like Abraham Lincoln did and enact martial law.
Martian law?
Or, you know, well, yeah. Santa Claus versus the Martians. But
yeah, it's going to be John Carter.
Oh, man. That poor movie.
I was thinking more of... But there was that auction thing I sent you with RoboCop 2 where you need 13,000 pounds in order to pick up.
They're currently like 15,000 pounds right now.
Was it?
Yeah.
Like, the British pound is not doing well, so it's only like $15,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's just the current high bid. I mean, it's going to go higher.
Yeah.
I'm still jaded by early 2000s Forge World, where that's like, this is $30,000.
Sure.
But, yeah, there was a bunch of John Carter of Mars memorabilia on that, too.
Was it like $10?
No, most of the bids were pretty high. But, I mean, like, so there was, like, battle damage armor from Carl Urban in Dread that had no bids on it. And I couldn't understand that.
Throw a dollar on there.
Yeah. There's also...
I don't know what the minimum bid. I assume they have minimum bids so you can't buy it for just a dollar.
Yeah, no, it was like 1,000 pounds for a minimum bid for most of the things.
But if it's like his whole outfit, holy fuck, it's yes!
Just the chest piece. Just the chest piece and the shoulders, but it was the battle damage part of it.
Still.
Yeah, it would be cool to own something of that. Even the Judge Dredd's nameplate for Stallone's Dredd was up on there too.
I will go to my grave regretting the fact that I did not drive down to Tennessee to pick up the MST3K doors.
What? I thought you were doing that.
I was going to do it, but in the day it took me to talk Raylene into letting me do it, somebody else had called dibs. And those fuckers were free. It was the legit doors that open up for the theater intro into the theater, and the fucking console for the push the button, Frank button from the Frank and Dr. Forrester years. Both just free for the taken.
Yeah, the console was the real win there, I think.
Dude, those doors would be great just taking up a whole wall in a room. Mm. Like, fuck yeah. They're just the satellite of love theater doors, but sadly, they were gone.
Mm. You'll have to fill your MST3K wing with other memorabilia.
Yeah. Patton Oswalt's skin.
I did. What?
I mean, I don't have Patton Oswalt's skin. What have you heard? He's not missing.
Is he? Is he missing?
No, don't check. He's fine.
I mean, it's 2020, so.
That's true, too. So what do we got to talk about? We got Bard Sung, which is that Kickstarter that just ended. That thing.
It's over.
I
think all of us backed? No, none of us. That's what it is. None of us backed it. I get those two things mixed up sometimes.
Yeah, when you're still trying to get Dark Souls 3 third wave stuff out to your customers, it's, you know, maybe it's time not to do a Kickstarter again.
Well, Kickstarter supposedly has a fucking rule where you can't do a Kickstarter until you finish delivering on your previous Kickstarters, and I guess that just doesn't fucking count.
Like, well, they're probably grandfathered in.
Yeah. I mean, did you see what the release date was for that?
2022, isn't it?
Well, I mean, realistically, them not delivering, it's the player's fault.
Yeah. It's 2022! That's how long my WoW subscription is going to last until.
I mean, let's review. Privateer is just about to ship their second Kickstarter since Dark Souls Wave 2 was released.
Oh, I need to do my backer kit.
Yeah, the at least with the Privateer one, it seems like that it's really more of a production guarantee, because they have everything ready to go pretty much, but they want to know kind of how much to make, you know, and then make some for stores too.
Speaking of Privateer and not Kickstarter, but whatever. So I was getting rather kind of impressed with their loot crate minis. Like, I like Gorten, like an actual like robot Gorten. He's adorable. Gorten, it's funny. Then I got one today, the most recent one, and it is just very, very cleverly just a sexy pistol wraith who wants to have sex with you because she's a sexy sexy with her legs hanging out, and her name is the very cleverly thought up Lady Wraith.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of thought went into, hey, what if you could fuck a pistol wraith? Just saying is all. It's a little disappointing compared to Gore 10 and the Willy Wonka version of Widget.
Again, I think we should start a campaign of some sort. Dominaire Rachef needs to be made.
Rachef, sure. Give me some fucking Tom of Finland action going on.
Yeah.
Yep. Rachef needs to exist. Damn it.
Fucking just Lady Wraith. They couldn't think of a pun that would excuse a sexy pistol wraith. They just said, fuck it, sexy pistol wraith. Sad.
Yeah. Well, I bet you probably in the pitch meeting, it probably did say sex pistol wraith.
Yeah.
See, that's better. At least it's a pun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sex pistol wraith. That I can go with.
Yeah. No, I got so many emails because I had backed one of some of the other stuff by Steamforged to try to get on Bard Song. I like the idea of the game. I always liked dungeon crawl style games, but like
they deserve zero of our money from here until eternity.
Pretty much. I mean that and some of the clickbaity writers that they got for there. So it was like. Not saying anything bad about the writers that they got to write their adventures, but a lot of their writers that they advertised on there were people who are interested in D&D. They have done something with D&D, not like an actual writer for D&D. It's like I played a character on an adventure show, and that's who they got as one of their writers. I don't know. I wish them the best-ish. But
I don't.
Somebody already posted a Zappity Grumble. We can answer it now, and I think it's God Tier is going to be the first game gone.
I assume the Zappity Grumble is what's going to be the first game gone.
Yeah.
Did you see that? I don't think that's a terribly effective question. The real question is which games will be left?
No, they're still going to have all. Because, I mean, there's no more support for Resident Evil 2. I mean that's just a board game done and over.
Exactly, what counts as being left? They shit out a FOMO licensed board game on Kickstarter, and that's it. They're just done. You know, Resident Evil 2, they never have to do anything for it. Dark Souls, they never have to do anything for it. They're just gonna continue to do that, and so they're never gonna. God Tier is gonna die because God Tier supposedly is gonna have upkeep and additional models and support, and there's no way in fuck they're doing that. So they'll
sooner
kill
or
it
later
off.
It'll be the player's fault.
Yep, sooner or later that'll be the player's fault. And they'll kill that off, and it's gonna be nothing but Cool Mini or Not style FOMO Kickstarter exclusive one and done zero support licensed games that make $10 million every time because. That shit sells on Kickstarter.
Here's the real question. What's the first of their properties that's going to get stolen and reprinted by a third-party Chinese manufacturer?
But you can get in a gas station, what was it, like Ohio or something? Where did somebody find that?
Yeah, Western Pennsylvania. Someone found a MechWarrior model, which is totally not a Kator Decimator model with the Kator symbols filed off. $3.
Yeah, hey, you know, get you a decimator on the cheap. Or just get a decimator on the cheap.
No.
Yeah, I mean, that is probably the sad thing of the War Machine secondary market, is you probably still can buy a decimator for less than that.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, anybody see, like, the quality of it? Is it actually decent, or is it just...
It's definitely the flexi plastic.
Oh...
You could get away with it though. Like it's decent enough quality that it would be tabletop.
Like
you know,
if you throw some
arms
like a good quality Krylon paint on it, you probably could hide it.
Dan just killed his camera.
Dan, no, my cat. Yeah. No, my cat killed the camera.
Nice. Yeah. No, but I bet you Travis will know.
He'll know
it's a
gacha game.
No, he'll know that it's a knockoff.
Oh yeah. Sorry, I thought you were rewinding to the question.
No.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
This is not really meant to be a shit on Steamforged podcast.
Yeah,
but,
it is.
But pretty much ever since Guild Ball was killed off, it's been. And their announcements of everything else since that point.
Let me interrupt you there for a second. It wasn't that they killed off Steamforge. Or, sorry, it wasn't that they killed off Guild Ball. Because I'm surprised we haven't seen everybody dropping like flies with the pandemic. It's not that they killed off Guild Ball. It's that they fucking blamed the players for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the big part. I mean, the community project that they have that's kind of trying to keep Guild Ball alive is seemingly doing well. I look at it once in a while in my Guild Ball, or in my Discord, because it's all in there. There's activity. I have not done anything with it at all. I'm not sure if I would either.
I mean, even if they revive it, it still doesn't fix the fundamental problems of Guild Ball, which is...
the community.
Like, well, there's no point in playing the ball game part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can talk about it outside of it because there's so little besides playing the game, so it does not foster collaborative community.
It would be nice if somebody made the actual fantasy football where playing the ball was an important part of the game.
It's always been my belief that the game should be that you could invigorate a lot more life into the game if you built it like Blood Bowl or like Mordheim, where you actually had players on a team, not just like a list of star players, but players that you would actually build up into the theme of the Brewers or the Masons and stuff like that. If they would actually go and do something like that, I think that would actually completely revive the game. Because me as a player, I really enjoy the customization I could do with a team, and when it makes me identify more with the team itself. Like,
yeah, I mean, and we are the type of nerds that like to see numbers go up over a span of time. So, I mean, just a campaign style play is always going to be welcome.
Yep, goes like same thing with Blood Bowl. I mean, generally, I think league play for Blood Bowl is one of the worst experiences you could have for the game. When you're winning, it's fun, but when you lose your star player or lose your things like that, permanently, it sucks. But it's still fun to watch that team progress and build. It just makes it harder when you lose those players.
Yeah.
I mean, but a slightly more generous injury system would fix that.
Yeah.
That's a specific Blood Bowl implementation problem.
Well, I enjoy...
Like, you could easily take out death, you know, and just have, like, X number of games out could vary, you know, and so having something out for, like, two or three games in a league would still be devastating, but not as bad as a death, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I like playing in tournaments, because the tournaments generally have what's known as a resurrection style, is after each game, the rosters basically reset.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get more skills than that, but that's just how tournament play is usually done.
I mean, you could even just do it as, like, oh no, your player died during the match, so they don't gain as much experience or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's still a reason to hit the big player, because they're going to slow down on advancement, but you're not actively being sent backwards, you're just not going as far forwards.
Yeah. Fair enough. Or you could do, like, a Brady for Bledsoe thing, where, like, death... Like, if your character's worth 200,000 points or whatever, and they die, that you get... you know, 150,000, so you don't have to, like, start from scratch. You know, you have, like, your backup one who's not quite as good. You know, whatever.
But at what point do I get to sell my prize character to the Buccaneers, then?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's I think, the biggest weakness of the campaign is because it actually gets it. If you're playing a long enough term campaign, it actively incentivizes you trying to kill strong players on the other team, not just to get them out of the game to win the game, but to advance yourself in the campaign relative to your opponents. like the last long-term campaign I was playing in that I had a I was playing Skaven because I'm an asshole, and I had a gutter runner roll 2+1 speed upgrades, mm-hmm. and somebody was slipped $20 to foul him to death.
See, the well, first I would camp- too. Yeah, the first campaign that I ever played in, I was playing Skaven because rats are adorable, and I didn't know enough about the game to know that they were actually really good. But I was playing in a game against somebody who had it was either orcs or dwarves, and like they had the ball and they steamrolled. They got a whole bunch of great blocks and they like knocked down basically my whole team. And then it came to my turn and I just looked at the board and said, "Okay, my turn's done. Your turn." And they're like, "You know, well, aren't you going to stand up any of your players?" I'm like, "No, because you're just going to hit them again." And he got so infuriated that I wouldn't just stand my guys up so that they could be murdered. He was just, yes, Andy, we see it. He was just angry that I was limiting him to one foul a turn as opposed to trying to murder my entire team while there was nothing I could do about it.
I want to see the box art, Andy. Stop eating it.
Hmm.
Oh. Is that the brand new one, or
this is the brand new one? This is the 2020.
Awesome.
Which I'm pretty excited about. It actually, the kind of really nice thing about it is it comes with a hard cover book in there too.
Does it come with a neoprene mat?
No. Oh,
come on, this is a Games Workshop product.
I know of a company that helps host this podcast that has some custom mats made by myself that might be able to sell them to you if you contact Nigel at MuseOnMinis.com.
So you got all the rules. How I know there were, you were a little concerned about the once per game abilities and their trackability. Are those limited to just star players? Are they pretty rare so that it's not a big deal?
I'm literally opening the box as we talk. So
oh, I didn't know if you had looked into that any further.
No, I mean the sprues are insane.
Well, sure, they're GW plastics.
Yeah. They look awesome though.
Like, I'm reasonably certain more engineering went into those than my car.
Do they look as fair good enough as She-Hulk's left leg?
So, oh man,
I don't think David saw that conversation, so he's an unbiased source.
Oh my lord, it's the Marvel Crisis Protocol, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Their She-Hulk.
She fractured
her left leg. Does not obey Euclidean geometry or human anatomy.
No.
The it's calf not her left is leg on the left side of it, and the leg is like the foot is not at the right angle.
Her leg is like mid break.
Yeah, it looks like she shattered her leg. You should look up She-Hulk Marvel Crisis Protocol.
I just put the picture in our chat so that he can see it. That is not how legs work.
I mean, some of them are okay, but I'm not too happy with a lot of the...
I am trying to get my knee and my foot to point in different directions like hers is, and it's extremely painful. Because the knee and the top of your foot are attached to the... They're on the face of your shin, right? So unless you twist your shin, you can't do what's happening there.
Ankles don't twist, or they're not supposed to.
Yeah, ankles don't have that much.
Also, her calf is really curious what's happening in front, so it's just kind of poking its head around to take a peek.
It could just be how it's painted, too, because it looks like there's a lot of starker highlights in the muscles.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that paint scheme in general. I also don't like the fact that it really looks like her clothes are just bad body paint.
Yeah, you can tell that there's a little raised area there, but just the way
not
it's
not really,
painted.
Yeah.
Like on her legs more so, but mm-hmm. like in the torso, though, it does look like it's just body paint.
I think if you cut her foot off right at the top of the shoe and rotated that foot so it's pointing more towards the other foot, it's not as bad, because then the calf is above her heel, and her toes are on the same side of the leg as the knee. I think that's 90% of the issue I'm having with it. The other 10% being the painted on spandex.
Yeah, I mean it looks like if you disconnected the leg and rotated it to the right, it would make more sense.
Yeah. It's really the fact that the calf is lined up with the left side of the foot and the knee is lined up with the right side of the foot.
Yeah.
Yeah, you rotate that foot.
Yeah, you rotate the
above her head and I think it's a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This entire conversation is causing me excruciating pain.
Because you're attempting to move your own leg in that manner.
It's a sympathetic, like, twisting.
Like, even the right leg seems a little bit off, too, because the knee is, like, pointing straight forward, but then the bottom of the foot is, like, slightly to the right. It just doesn't look comfortable the way it's...
It feels overly stylized for the sake of stylization.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, I love the Marvel franchise. Marvel is awesome. I basically just love everything about it. But some of the models that I've seen come out of MCP, just kind of... I don't like them that much.
I like posted Wolverine. A picture from another angle, for what it's worth.
Oh, well, maybe that'll help, but still...
Her foot and her knee, like, I think it only just encapsulates what I was saying. They were going for, like, a sideways planted foot, but they didn't think about the ripple effect that would have on twisting the whole leg.
Okay, alternative theory. Did the person who put the model together to paint it just fuck up horribly?
Maybe.
That's better, considering the fact this is the official box art?
Based on her pose, I really think they were going for, like, a planted foot, and they didn't think about... rotating the whole leg as opposed to just the foot.
Yeah, because it looks like if you could rotate a couple of those parts and it would look normally. Like I don't know. There is a serious dysfunction there, and I'm not sure what it is. But
her foot looks like it's planted right. It's all basically from the calf down to the ankle. It looks like it's wrong. At least in my opinion.
Merp.
It's still sealed, so I have yet to even look at it. Oh, it's got like a little bookmark in there too.
Ooh.
I did get this on discount from Discount Games Inc. I'm not trying to name drop all the people that are on the Muse Network, but
yeah, are we sponsored? Are they paying our hosting fees or anything? Come on.
No.
Get a little scratch out of this.
Yeah. Well, maybe I can get some out of Nigel, but I don't think so about the Discount Games part. They got their own podcast to fund. That Chain Attack thing? Is that thing still going?
I don't know.
I'm surprised that we are still going.
Are we?
I mean, we had, like, 10 people pop up within, like, 30 minutes of Andy posting with questions, so we apparently still have listeners.
Yep.
Yeah, we had... I mean, the number of people that have asked us if we were going to podcast again because they missed us was really weird.
I think we did get, what, plural messages about that since the last time we podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we slowed down to every 2 weeks, which means if we ever miss one, it's a month before we podcast again and people panic.
Yeah, but I had issues with audio. Hopefully this will be better this time around. I got some cheat sheets. I'm excited to check out the rules, and I'll probably give my own like little thumb through of what's all here. I know they have new teams. They have like Black Orc teams now. Oh, it's exciting. I love Blood Bowl.
Blood Bowl is my favorite bad miniatures game.
It's a board game, I would say.
Fair enough. It's still
that's probably a healthier, ironically. Yeah, I'd say it's probably a healthier mindset to approach it as a board game.
Yeah, it's most definitely not fair, but
it's not fair. It's not balanced. It's not well designed. Like it is everything that I am against, and I still enjoy it because I'm not entirely cold-hearted.
Is it the miniatures game equivalent of Dune?
I assume you mean the 1984 film version?
No, I'm talking the Avalon Hill board game. Oh. Where from pure game design perspective, it's a terrible game, but it is so accurate to fluff and feeling that I don't care.
So I think the big difference that is that Dune accidentally is balanced. Whereas Blood Bowl never quite came around the horn with Insanity to somehow being balanced again.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Dune's balance, though, is driven by who's playing. Remember the utter crushing we did to that rando group at PEG?
Oh, those poor guys. Those poor people.
Like, Nathan and I resisted teaming up for 10 turns, and they forced us to, and, like, one turn later, we won.
I did feel bad. The most recent game of Dune I played was you, me, Josh, and three people who were playing for the first time, and Josh and I were teamed up, and I went for, like, what could have been a victory, wholly expecting Josh to lose his battle, and so then I won my battle, barely, and then I wandered off to go get a soda, and I came back, and the game was over, because he had somehow won the battle, and I did not think it was mathematically possible. And so I felt bad that those three new people lost.
Yeah, it was like a four-turn game, too.
I feel double bad because afterwards, like, I'm like, you know, we have time for another game, and they're like, no, thanks, and I'm like, yeah, you know, that's fine. I wish that I had offered to just declare that the traitor, that the leader I had used was the traitor card that he had, so that I retroactively lost my game, and then we could have continued. Because the only problem that would have done is it would have fucked over you, Dan, because you were Benny, and your prediction had already been revealed. But frankly, you know, fuck you.
That's fair. I mean, that is the proper response to anyone ever playing Benny, so...
Yeah. Well, and it was fucking over the third veteran, right? So the three veterans would have been a little boned. Like, Josh and I would have lost our victory, you would have lost your prediction, and then the three new people would have got to continue to experience the game.
I mean, it continued my streak of being off by only half of the Benny prediction, and by, like, one turn, so...
Ooh, they updated the Chaos Chosen teams. So before you could take, like, three big guys with them... Potentially a Chaos Troll, Chaos Ogre, or Minotaur. You can only choose one of them now.
And there's I didn't know that was a team.
Yeah. Well, that's just the Chaos. Now they just call them the Chaos Chosen. Black Wait. Orc team?
Hmm? Wait, what? Chaos?
I mean, Chaos used to
just take a Minotaur, right?
Yeah, you could only have one. You could only have one, and it had to be a Minotaur.
Well, now you have your choice.
Okay, so that's a difference. So yeah. Instead of just the Minotaur, there's three different biggies.
Maybe I'm thinking of there's Underworld Chaos, I think, that or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, because the only two Chaos that were in like the main Blood Bowl of the last editions was Nurgle and Chaos. Mm-hmm. And Nurgle just had Beast of Nurgle, and Chaos just had the Minotaur.
Yep, yeah. That is true. Yeah. There are lots of
Chaos teams now because it's very chaotic.
Ha. There is Black Orc team.
Is there a Slaanesh team?
I've only seen... Well, the Black Orcs are four Black Orcs, a Trained Troll, and then all Goblins. Or six Black Orcs you could have on a team. I like
six
Bobs.
Black Orcs, a big guy, and Goblins?
Yep. Hmm. I like Bobs. And Bobs are basically... Oh, they're 10 plus armor value now. Ha! Chaos Renegade teams, which is, yeah, that's just the Chaos Pact team.
Oh, that's the traditional Chaos.
No, it's a Chaos Pact, which is like one Dark Elf, one Human, one Goblin, one Renegade Orc, one Skaven.
Oh, okay.
So it's just one from each team?
Yeah, pretty much.
Is there one random halfling on there?
No.
It's nope. The Olympics team.
It's a Human Thrower, Renegade Goblin, Renegade Orc, Renegade Skaven, Renegade Dark Elf, and then they can have one of... No, they can have up to three big guys. A Troll, Ogre, Minotaur, or Rat Ogre.
Sure, why not?
Dark Elves look about the same. Dwarf teams look almost exactly the same, except for Death Roller is on their roster now. Elven unions are just crap because they're elves.
Goblins with other machines of war still a thing?
They are. They have a Ooligan in there.
They have your chainsaw, your ball and chain guy, your pogo guy.
Yep, your armor. Bama, your loony, your fanatic, your pogoer.
Your Gwent guy.
Doom Diver. They got those now.
I don't think I want to know what a Doom Diver is.
Well, they're just basically kamikaze goblins with kites in the Warhammer Fair Fantasy enough. World. I was being sensitive about that, too. Halflings, there's a human team. Imperial Nobility teams. Lizardmen teams. Necromantic Horror, which is the Necromantic team, looks like. Nurgle team. Bloaters, Pestigors, and Rotter Linemen. And a Rot Spawn.
Wait, what?
Oh, Rot Spawn. It's basically the Beast of Nurgle.
Oh, okay. And then Bloaters instead of the Nurgle, the Chaos Marines?
Yeah, instead of the Chaos Warriors. They're basically just Bloaters. They just have Disturbing Appearance, Foul Appearance, Disturbing Presence, Foul Appearance, Plague Ridden, which is a new ability.
I mean, Disturbing Presence and Foul Appearance, that's what their Chaos Warriors had anyway, so I guess they just changed their name, basically.
Yep.
It's the GW way.
Yep.
True, because you can trademark orcs when you can't trademark orcs.
Yep. Ogre teams. Old World Alliance teams. That is all basically the good guys on a team. So it's like an Old World packed team.
Call me when there's a team that has the cannon from Battlemasters.
That's not going to happen.
The best GW game ever.
That wasn't GW. They supplied the minis for it.
I mean, it's GW as much as fucking HeroQuest is, right? It was the Warhammer World by Milton Bradley.
Yep.
I love Battlemasters.
Did anybody back that? Battlemasters?
What?
Not Battlemasters, but HeroQuest.
I mean, some people did.
Oh. I didn't.
I didn't mean people on this podcast.
Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Yeah, I'm saving all my money for the Gwent expansion.
Got some good cards on there. Neat new mechanics. Lot to talk about.
Snotlane teams, Underworld Denzians, Wood Elf teams.
I'm trying, Nathan.
So they got. Looks like they got rid of the Khemri for sure. Vampires are not in here. There's a bunch of others. Chaos Dwarves are not in here. But that's not to say they won't be coming out.
You gotta save room for those expansions.
More importantly, what do we think about Quen finally being back in the game so that all of the game signs are in Gwent? Quen, 10 provision, 2 strength, it has shield on deploy, play a Witcher from your deck. Adrenaline 3, give that Witcher shield. So it's a Witcher tutor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see what your flaw was. You asked me a question regarding Witcher fluff.
Yeah, I know nothing about Witcher.
As far as the video games, Quen was the only sign that wasn't in Gwent currently. It was previously back in open beta, but they pulled it out of the game. It was look through your deck and give 3 card shield. So it's kind of like All God, but with shield instead of the +2.
Got it. I am looking forward to seeing how many... So one of the new mechanics that is being introduced, David, is the ability to stack a card back on the top of your opponent's deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to see how high I can stack my opponent's deck during a game. Like,
you know, and then drop that huge value Colgrim.
Yeah, it's like, despite drawing 16 cards during this game, you have 17 cards remaining in your 25-card deck on round 3.
So Quen is a neutral, and Colgrim is... So you could take him and Colgrim for that massive finisher, right? So you play Quen as your third-to-last card to drop Colgrim. If you got, like, an 8-card difference, he's going to boost 3 times. He's going to be, like, a 25-point third-to-last card play. And we'll have a shield.
It's going to be an insane week.
Because the fact that his adrenaline triggers up to 3 times is indeed insane. Like, I thought it was just, like, a one-time trigger, but each turn it checks to see if it's adrenaline triggers.
Next Tuesday is going to be fun, especially once the servers come back online at, like, you know, 11 o'clock.
Oh my god, there's a card whose reveal I had missed, and it's one of my old favorite cards but brought back. It was a Ciri card, in open beta. I think it was Siri Dash did this, but now it's on a monster card, which is every time it dies, you shuffle it into your deck and increase its power by 3.
Ooh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's 12 provision, starts at 8, but yeah, especially monsters, because you just fucking consume it. Yeah. So you just eat it, you get plus 8, and now there's an 11 in your deck that you just, you know, you tutor out somehow, eat it, now there's a 14 in your deck.
Yep.
The dugouts are fucking tiny.
The war of game talk. I mean, the dugouts don't need to be big, right?
Well, they have to be able to... Well, I mean, you should be able to have to fit 16 of your players on a dugout.
Yeah.
Because if... Or at least in the Dead Mindred box, and that's... Oh, is there no knocked-out box? Oh, no, it is a knocked-out box. Interesting.
Is the Dead and Injured 4x4?
No. Dead and Injured is the little skull and crossbones on here.
Yeah. Well, and it's 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. It's big enough for 16 people. You can fit them in there.
It's old Orc Battle Wagon rules.
Yeah.
If they fit, they fit.
Yeah. Barrel of Monkeys.
If they fall, they're
dead.
That
is the size of the base.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can fit like 6 on the first layer.
Fair enough.
Then you flip them over.
Yep. You do 4 upside down, and then you do 6 again the other way, and boom, there's 16 right there. Easy peasy, Andy. Learn to battle wagon.
Yep.
The orc battle wagons back in the day were excellent, where you could just toss as many orcs as you could on the battle wagon. If any of them fell off, they were injured.
No, they just died. They were just removed. Yeah. Doesn't matter if Gazgul fell off and he had a 2+ invulnerable save, he dead.
Oh, the board looks pretty cool. Making it awkward for me to film myself.
Man, I have never played a Syndicate deck, but these Syndicate cards are really tempting me.
The Salamander's insane.
Salamander's insane. I like this. I like the Salamandra Abomination. And I see Fallen Rayla, Prophet 3, Tribute 3, Gain Veil, Adrenaline 3, whenever you pay a tribute, boost this card by the tribute's cost. That's a neat engine. Say,
you play that one and you play Salamander after, it's like Tribute 9.
Yup, yup. Oh, but then she'd be poisoned. Oh, wait, she has Veil.
Mm-hmm. I look forward to next Wednesday when Brian feeds me a Syndicate deck to do well on, so...
Yeah.
That's assuming Brian will play it. Does he still play Gwent?
Yeah, he's excited about the expansion.
Yeah. Okay. Until Cyberpunk drops, so I got like a week to farm out a good deck from him. So.
See, I have time because I'm going to play Cyberpunk on the PS5, and I'm not going to have a PS5 anytime soon. Although Cyberpunk isn't coming out for the PS5, it's coming out for PS4 with upgrade, you know, expansion ability or whatever, and they say you can carry over your save files, so I could start playing it on the PS4, and then when I get a PS5, I can just switch.
I thought your dogs ate your controllers.
One of them is marginally usable.
I probably have
the
an extra one if
missing,
you show
missing, like, buttons. Like, most of them have been eaten to the point where buttons are gone, but there's one of them where it's just the rubber on the thumb pads is missing, and the buttons have tooth marks, so they hurt.
That sounds like lessons of desperation. You're like, yeah, I am bored enough, I will try this again.
Yeah, I don't have the rubber on the thumbsticks either, and I just have small children.
Yeah. Did they chew the triggers to the point where they're jagged?
No.
Yeah, that's the fun part about mine. And then I thought about buying another controller, but one of these controllers was only a couple months old, the fucking dog, but not even my dog, technically. But I didn't want to spend $60 on a new controller, because that's wasted money whenever I do get around to getting a PS5.
I like how you look over your shoulder before complaining about somebody else's dog.
I was looking to see if the dog was over here so I could yell at it specifically, but it wasn't.
Is it a Georgie?
No, it's the kid's dog. It's Ruby, the fucking moron. Box of bricks.
I know you guys are talking about Gwent's and other games and that, but I will say, though, the one thing I'm sorely disappointed in Games Workshop is this fucking sprue for all the range ruler stuff. So the range ruler, instead of just being like a nice clear piece of plastic, it's a two-part plastic bit. You have to assemble. And that's okay. The range ruler.
what's the giant balls? What are those things?
Which ones?
The football shaped thing. No,
that's just the passing template. So that part right here is like short range.
Oh wait, they're and labeled 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah,
they got hash marks 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
They're cool, but it's ridiculously huge.
Form
for
over
the
function.
Board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean that's the GW way. I mean.
Yeah.
This is where Nigel can come and save the day with his laser cutter and be like, "Here's a functional ruler."
Yeah, or even just print it on some nice clear plastic like the old range rulers were. But, you know, I might be...
GW has an aesthetic, you know. Yeah. And at this point, if they didn't put something overboard like that in the game, someone would complain. Just like someone would complain about how Toros are back in stock, but with metal bits.
How dare they have a metal bit?
What the hell? I saw that thread. It was just so unreasonable. It was one of the worst things I've seen in a long time.
Like, he was legit just mad that a couple of bits in a plastic kit were metal? Like, that happens all the fucking time. You'll just have, like, a plastic thing with, like, one random metal head or something. Like, that's life.
That's bad management.
That's like half of the Privateer Press lineup.
Yeah, but you don't understand, guys.
My nemesis. Like,
people don't understand how miniatures manufacturing works. Everything needs to be high-quality hard plastic, you know, GW-level hard plastic, but for, like, grocery store prices.
Yep.
Yeah, it's bad management. That's what it is, Dan. You just don't understand. It's bad management.
No, it's the player's fault.
Hey, Andy, do you want to do, like, 70 magnets for me on miniatures? Why are you just frozen holding a box?
No. Maybe. What you got?
I have 4 warjacks, each of which has like 12 weapons and 4 heads that need to be magnetized.
Do I have to do that to mine?
I mean, yes.
Shit.
Or you can just glue any random head in there and not play at a Privateer Press event, because any other event is going to let you just tell your opponent what head you're using, but Privateer Press official events have to, you know, they have to. I mean, it's their fucking game. They can't just admit that WYSIWYG isn't a thing. So any official event is going to have the magnetized heads, but for just regular play at your friendly game store and at a local tournament, if you just go, yeah, I glued in this head, but I'm using head B instead, your opponent's not going to care as long as you're clear. Weapons almost certainly do need to be magnetized, unless you're to the point where, like, I know that I'm only ever bringing this loadout, hand me the glue.
Sure.
But, yeah.
But all friendly local game stores, except for in the Milwaukee area.
Wow. I'm trying to think. Travis might have even said for local events he's not going to
care. I don't think he even cares for the weapons he's going to make you do. The heads, he isn't going to care for local events.
He's
not that unreasonable.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the warjacks that I've done, too, sometimes will have the one head. Well, I'm the crazy one that will actually put multiple heads in there, but I haven't seen anybody complain that their destroyer is... The head that's on the destroyer is actually a juggernaut.
I guess, speaking of which, that is news. The Warcaster Tournament Pack is out. OP document is out.
I have not looked at it because this is my domain. Mm. I mean,
like, this is a very boring domain of Shadowlands for you, Andy, but...
Shadowlands has been pretty good.
Yeah, I know. Shadowlands was fun.
Here we go. Andy, these are all the weapons I need magnetized.
How is the nicest way I could say go fuck yourself? That is a lot of weapons.
Yeah, you might need to provide like 2 bottles of Fireball, Nathan.
Yeah, I mean everything has a price.
I mean,
has a price.
I mean, I
could get you to say yes to this. It's just a matter of figuring out what I need to give you.
Fair enough. A heads up, and a lot of alcohol. Arctic Circle is asking if that was War Machine or Warcaster. We're talking about Warcaster. They have a lot of different builds for a lot of their warjacks with different customizable weapons. So it has a lot more customi- optimization in that game than in their previous games.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the other issue is, like, comparing to the, like, caring about what Kador Warjack head you have, is that, like, that doesn't matter in War Machine, right? Like, that's just aesthetics. As long as you know it's a Devastator versus a Marauder, the head is completely irrelevant, so you can do a lot more along those lines. The head legitimately has different rules in Warcaster depending on which head is on the jack. And so it is an element of gameplay, which head is there. But nobody's got fucking eagle eyes to be able to see across a table to even tell these fucking heads apart. So it's going to be verbal anyway.
How big are the heads? Can I actually fit a magnet in there?
You can. I'm able to fit a, what is it, a 16th inch magnet in.
So 8mm, is that?
3mm, I think. No.
3mm is really tiny. It's a tiny magnet.
Here, I can dig out a head. I'll dig out a head so you can see how big a Warjack head is in Warcaster.
Will you lose it under
the
table?
It is roughly paperclip size.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Will you lose the head underneath the table like you did through that Dead by Daylight match?
And that'll be fine. I accidentally apparently got an extra A-type for my Scourge. Because I only have 3 Scourges, and I ended up with 4 A weapon sets. Which I guess will be good if I ever want to run all 3 of them and have one of them doubled up. So... I don't know if this will focus. This is a head.
Okay. It should be doable. I mean, if anything... You should be able to put the magnet inside the torso and then attach like something magnetic onto the head that's small enough for it to be able to clip.
Yeah, the heads are pretty light. The other trick I've seen people doing is just double drill the hole in the torso and just glue the magnet right to the existing mounting peg on the head so you don't have to at least drill into the head.
Yeah,
oh,
sure.
Yeah, I've usually... What I've done for like the Kador Warjacks is I've put a piece of like a pin...
Mm-hmm.
There's something in there that's metallic, and then put the actual magnet inside the torso.
Yeah, you can't. Can't focus this close.
Yeah, for a lot of the Scourge weapons, I full magnetize them, but there's one that's called the Nailer, which is pretty lightweight that I just stuck a paperclip through it because that's also the most likely weapon to need to be on both shoulders or either shoulder.
Okay.
So just having a paperclip run all the way through it solved a lot of polarity problems because the weapon is thinner than two magnets stacked together. So
yeah, that's the other issue with magnetizing is that theoretically each of these weapons needs two magnets because it can be on a left or a right shoulder.
There's not that many that actually cross over. A lot of them you can just say, because like all the 3-point weapons, you only need to magnetize one side, really, other than one or two for Nemesis. Ones.
And worst case, if it's supposed to be, like, you can have an upside down gun.
Exactly.
You magnetize the one side, you just flip it over to put it on the other side.
Exactly.
The clip coming at the top, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All my Warcaster is literally sitting in a box, folded up, just waiting for the time when we can actually go out and adventure in the world.
All my Warcaster is in the replacement case that I got from ordering the Guild Ball case from Battle Foam or whoever.
Yeah.
Josh and I have gotten a bunch of tabletop games in of Warcaster, and it's actually been going pretty smooth.
Yeah, all of my Warcaster stuff is in 2 boxes behind my desk right now.
I can spoiler alert and tell you, whenever we get around to playing them in person, when I run events, the events I run are going to have first to winning 2 rounds wins the game. As the scenario rule.
I would like to try that. I want to see how that...
I would love to see people try that, because if that works, and again, you wouldn't have accelerating scenario points. Each scenario, each round, each pulse, rather, each pulse, all the points will be worth the same. You play pulse 1, you see who won, they win the round, you reset the score, and then with the current table scenario, you play round 2, you see who won, you reset the score, and then you play round 3. First of 2 rounds wins, because the only issue that I really have with the mechanics of Warcaster is the fact that every game is maximum length. There's no such thing as, this is a lunch round, I'm going to go for an assassination, and the game at least will be over sooner. You're always playing 3 pulses.
Yep.
Gwent-style first to two could be interesting.
Yeah, I'd say, it isn't so bad at skirmish size when you're only 9 turns, but a 15-turn game takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
Is the is a game actually time-wise about the same as a War Machine game?
I don't know. Tabletop Simulator adds drag, so until I can actually play it in person, now that I know what the rules are, I can't answer that question.
Yeah, it feels longer right now, but the issue is Tabletop Simulator plus lack of familiarity, yeah. Right?
The Australians who are able to play in person have actually gotten even full-size games down to, I want to say, Octavius got one in under 2 hours. But
right. which means it's about the same length, right?
Yeah. Same length, yeah.
But mm-hmm. with no possibility of a fast game, right? It's the same yep. length as the longest War Machine game you can play.
But like, I mean, they are some of the only people on Earth right now who have actually been able to play enough in person to do that. So.
Yeah. No, I'm excited to play that when it.
Mm-hmm. It's
can.
A lot of fun. I mean, the game Josh and I played this weekend, it came down to the last card, the last activation, the last card played, he was able to stop my play after we both used jump rules to score extra victory points and stuff by jumping off of buildings into control zones, so.
And I like strike dice.
Mm-hmm.
That's my bold stance.
Isn't the strike dice basically the Mompok dice?
It is the yeah. Mompok dice. Yeah, okay. I say now that I'm getting used to them, I do like it. It just now that I'm starting to learn the curves, it works well. About the only thing I wish is that the double strike would be a different color on the PP dice than the regular ones, just to make glance math a little bit easier. Because then it's like, oh, I see black, it's one. I see blue, it's two, or something like that on the dice.
Sure, I do wish that Warcaster had boost dice so that I could still call them bloost dice to piss off Travis, because that's the best part about Mompok is referring to bloost dice. Because Travis loves portmanteaus.
I'm surprised he hasn't just jumped into the cast.
To yell at us yet.
Erdixicle is asking, is Warcaster LGS friendly? And I assume he means from the SKUs.
It's better. I mean, it's a limited thing. And the other thing is, like, the last Kickstarter, the retailer pledge was buy whatever you want and we'll give you wholesaler price.
Yeah. I mean, it's retailer friendly in that regards. I think the SKU size, it's not that big. There's only four factions. A lot of the Warjack kits you can make into anything.
One, two, three, four, five... 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12...
Do,
13 products per faction right now, including the starter box and mantlets and the custom objectives. So after Kickstarter 2 is all in retail, there's 13 SKUs per faction, I think.
I got...
Plus 6 cross-faction ones.
I got some cards in the mail. I'm not sure where those came from.
Fewer than 60 SKUs. Not too shabby.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take up a lot of space. A lot of everything is really kind of compact, so.
Yeah, almost everything is under a deck box size. So, can replace a blister hanger on a pegboard wall, and then you have four battle boxes, and I'm guessing the vehicles are going to be in a larger box, but
yeah, I don't know. It depends how large they need to be. Like, they might be able to fit into like a Warjack size box.
I'm expecting like a Warjack size box, yeah. Just because those bodies, those vehicle bodies, are going to be resin casts and they're going to be chunkier. But yeah, I'm pretty sure even when I get my Wave 2 stuff, I will still be able to fit all of my AC and all of my ISA into a single Battlefoam War Machine case.
So it looks like I got some Firebrand cards. I got these recently. I don't know. I just got a random package from Privateer. And these Firebrand cards with like gold.
Ooh.
Gold nameplates.
What's the weapons on them?
The assault rifle, bayonet, null
okay,
cannon.
Yeah. All right. So those are Kickstarter 1 things. Yeah.
Okay. Got those. But I mean, like, here's an example, easy example of like how the packaging is. It's just literally
yeah,
and just little box.
Everything so far has come in a box of that size.
Paladin Weaver.
Other than the battle box.
I would say it's about the same size as their blisters.
It is.
Maybe slightly smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got some...
Yeah, it's funny. The packaging inside the starter packs, instead of using like plastic blisters, they have those paper packages, which is more ecologically friendly.
Ecologically friendly, and makes me think I've just got some.
It does make me hungry for egg rolls.
Yeah, pot stickers and egg rolls.
Almond cookies.
This is my first time actually opening the box. It turns out
blue thin mints. Yep.
The advertising on the front is actually just the card, looks like.
Yep. Which is also nice, because that means they just ordered a giant stack of boxes, and then they have insert cards to flip them around, too, so they don't have to worry about... They can do bulk package orders, too, which is really nice.
The insert cards have fluff on the back.
Yep. Nope, I'm excited to actually assemble it sometime. I don't know what faction I have. It looks like... I got a Firebrand, a Morningstar.
You have the Space Nazis.
Sweet! Not really.
They're Space Capitalists.
Capitalists, okay.
Yeah, they're the Space Capitalists. You have the Space Capitalists, you have the Firefly cosplayers, you have the cultists, and you have the aliens.
Okay.
Yep.
But it's all True sitting story. In my box here. And I do want some... I want some egg rolls.
Yep.
Alright. I have to leave in a few minutes to ferry a kid back from work. But I have some Southern facts. I have more. I have three Southern facts because it's been a while since we've podcasted. So I've got some things everybody should know. The first Southern fact is that hookworm is an intestinal parasite that is primarily associated with sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia, and is also endemic in Lowndes County, Alabama.
Nice.
Was it because somebody had like some pet hookworms and they flushed them down the toilet, and so it's kind of like the alligators in Florida?
No, because the area is too poor to have proper septic training, and the county health department is powerless to do anything about it.
Fair.
So soon to be the last COVID spot in America.
Yeah. Second Southern fact, the Louisiana Governor's Mansion was built in 1963. The architecture and the general aesthetic of it was based off of a pre-Civil War plantation. And currently the grounds are kept by prisoners who are paid, who are overwhelmingly black and paid under a dollar an hour.
But that's okay, because they're prisoners, and slavery is legal if they're in jail.
Yeah. I mean, literally that is the legal defense of it. And the third and final Southern fact...
In Thor 3, when the Grandmaster refers to the slaves, or somebody refers to slaves, and he says, you know, please call them prisoners with jobs, and that's just a little too real in America.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's just that the fucking building is based off of a pre-Civil War plantation, and
I'm surprised
they do
it's not just a pre-Civil War plantation.
Yeah, I don't know, is it better or worse? Like, if you just had a plantation laying around, sure, make it your mansion. But to be like, man, we need to build a mansion. You know what are wonderful? We're Civil War plantations. Let's build a new one of those.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's aggressively terrible. Yeah. Because this is the whole so the whole thing about Confederate monuments in the South is that they didn't really start showing up until the 1920s and were built from like the 1920s through the 1960s, and it was very specifically a reaction to advances in civil rights. And I mean, the governor's mansion that was built to look like a Southern plantation in 1963 replaced one that was built in, I think, the 1900s, like shortly before World War One, which was built to look like the White House. So I mean, they replaced a White House knockoff with a plantation knockoff in 1963.
Paula Deen was thrilled.
Yeah. And the third and final fact today is the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, which banned slavery, as Nathan has said, unless you're in prison, was ratified by the state of Mississippi on February 7th, 2013.
Yeah. Good time.
So they finally said, yeah, we'll do this in 2013.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
In fairness, when it first came out, they were not allowed to vote on it. They were told, you will accept it or we will resume the war. So, and then for 120 years, people just got pissed and ignored it.
No, they had the opportunity to vote for it and they rejected it.
Yeah.
Oh, I think they rejected it in 65 and then in 66 as well. The state actually passed a resolution ratifying it in 1995, but the Secretary of State at the time never actually certified it. So the state did not officially sign on to the 13th Amendment until 2013, when two college professors at the University of Mississippi actually made enough noise that they actually bothered to certify it and actually sign on to the 13th Amendment.
My favorite Civil War thing that's still ongoing is the Virginia battle flag that is in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Because at the Battle of Gettysburg, a Minnesota regiment took like 90% casualties, and they captured a strategically important place, and they took the battle flag of that Virginia battalion, and they said, "Fuck you, this is ours now. We win, you know, this fight. We paid in blood." So it went back to Minnesota. Minnesota had it, and like every once in a while, Virginia's like, "Can we have our flag back?" And Minnesota's like, "Go fuck yourselves. Ours." The best, like Jesse Ventura said, like, yeah, it was their heritage, but beating them is our heritage, so we're keeping the flag.
Jesse Ventura was asked personally to give the flag back by somebody from Virginia, and his literal direct response was, "Why? We won."
Yep. The most recent time was just like last year. The Virginia governor asked to borrow it. He said, "Okay, can we just borrow it? I promise we'll give it back." And Minnesota's like, "Fuck you, our flag. You want it? Come and get it." Which is great.
Yeah. So that was our segment for Dave's Southern Facts.
We'll have more next time.
But I've decided to lean into that heritage counterargument. If the Confederate battle flag is your heritage, burning down Atlanta is my heritage. It's only fair.
So you're pro Sherman March?
Fuck yeah, I'm pro Sherman March. Eat a dick, slavers. If you didn't want your entire state burned to the ground, maybe you shouldn't have owned people.
I mean, when you put it like that.
Yeah. Can we get Crippled System pro Sherman March t-shirts made?
Dude, I wonder if they have like Sherman March. So they have lots of t-shirts.
I guarantee you there are. Like, I can get you some people for that. Yeah. Like I know people who have already made that merchandise.
I have two like parody world tour t-shirts. One of which I'm willing to wear in public, but I'm too fat for it. And the other one of which is a little too edgy to wear in public. And that is the Napoleon War World Tour. And of course, it has like the Moscow tour date and it's canceled, you know. And then there was a Hitler World Tour one that a friend of mine had. And he's like, "This is too edgy for me. You can have it if you wear it to Portillo's." So the one time I wore it was to a Portillo's. And it's legitimately funny because it's not like it's pro-Hitler. The last thing on the tour date is the bunker. Like, it celebrates him fucking killing himself. But even still, you wear a shirt with Hitler on it, people don't read it to kind of figure out what's going on.
There's
got to be like a Sherman's March tour shirt that has like the various places they went.
No, the shirt I want made is John Brown and Sons Fencing Club, established 1856, Pottawatomie, Kansas.
Sure. I want to get like a sports style like a jersey for the Prague Defenestrators. I just need someone to make up like a logo of like a bishop going through a window. Like, I don't know what it has to be, but I want it to just be for the Prague Defenestrators.
Oh man, Nathan, you missed a wonderful conversation over the summer when David and I taught Jake about European history, and we got to the five defenestrations of Prague section.
Yeah, we got to the early modern era, and then both of us are kind of like, yeah, it's
whatever. It's imperialism now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it took like half an hour to convince him it was a real thing.
Yeah, I mean the early modern era is kind of like when I was in Amsterdam on my honeymoon. That it's like, yeah, there are a lot of old townhouses here, but they're still townhouses and they're boring.
Oh man, I have found three Sherman's March to the Sea shirts, all of which are amazing. So, as predicted, there is one that is full on the March to the Sea tour, 1864 to 1865, and it has all the tour stops on it listed. There is another one that has a picture of, basically just a picture of the state with like the arrows where it fits, and it says Sherman's March, Northern Pride.
Oh.
And then there's another one that just has a picture of Sherman, and it says, "Born to March, South is a fuck. Fuck free them all, 1864. I am William Sherman, 410,757,864,530 dead Confederates."
Yeah, I want the John Brown version of that.
"Born to March, South is a fuck. Free them all, 1864.
Jeez.
I think I'm just going to get all of these.
Well, now you have a new shirt to wear to the Portillo's opening when it opens on the west side.
Oh, I'm excited about that. I'm so excited I don't have to travel so far to get my Portillo's.
There's another one! It's just a picture. It's the classic picture, you know, his portrait, him with his hand in his shirt, looking all happy like he always looks. And it says, "Be the scorched earth campaign you wish to see in the world." That's words to live by. I wonder if I could have an entire clothing, like my entire wardrobe, be nothing but General Sherman March to the Sea outfits.
Yeah. Well, we should probably jump over to our
Zappity Grumbles.
Yep.
I gotta go.
Do you have a recommendation in this 30 seconds before you leave, David?
I mean, I am really enjoying Shadowlands. John Brown merchandise is the recommendation. I will say that I'm really enjoying Shadowlands, but I'm not going to officially recommend it because I feel like friends shouldn't recommend black tar heroin to friends. I will say that, I mean, it's like, that MMOs and
yeah, I mean, I hit pandemic stage, downloaded Old Republic again, so.
Yeah. But yes, Shadowlands is good. Use it at your own discretion, though. And see you guys soon, and podcast people in a couple of weeks.
All right.
Right.
All right, Zappity Grumble. Should I rip the Band-Aid off now, Andy?
For the Zappities?
Yep.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
All right. How can other game companies best incorporate Gwent into their game?
Well, I already told how Warcaster could do it.
Replace the Cypher deck?
Ooh. Every game could have play a game of Gwent to decide who goes first, and or as a tiebreaker.
I would be appreciative of the play game at Gwent for the tiebreaker. Like, you want to tie this up? I got this.
No. No, that would just guarantee me not playing board
just don't
games.
Tie. Play to win. My two favorite current tiebreakers are the Scepter of Zavendor, which is like a multi-hour, fairly heavy Euro game, and the tiebreaker is that the Tide players play a game of Scepter of Zavendor. And it's come up once. And then the other favorite one, which I don't remember what game it is, but the tiebreaker was Fisticuffs. And in the tips in the instruction manual, they say, "In case of a tie, strike early."
Yeah, I'd be up for that. You know, either Gwent or Stab, and we'll see which
Gwent,
one.
Gwent or Death?
which one
give
works?
Me Gwent or give me Death. Yeah, which one would Andy like less?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like I could take a couple hits.
It's Mayville rules.
Yeah. Yeah. small town of Mayville. Stabby, stabby.
What's happening?
Come home!
Which will happen first, the end of the pandemic or Steamforge shutting down another one of their games due to those awful players?
Oh, man, I don't think God Tier lasts the pandemic.
I don't think so either. I mean, they have a bunch of new stuff coming out for it, and just because I want to make sure I have the full collection, I want to get it. But, I mean, no one plays it around here. I mean, it might be played online. I don't know. I think Steamforge will be shutting down a game first. So when you look at it, their next thing that they're putting out is not going to be available until 2022.
I mean, I would not be shocked if they slip a release date because all their manufacturing is overseas.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Horizon Zero Dawn, that started popping up on their store, but I mean, that's now. So, I mean, it's like 2 years until they have another product. It's...
You know. Yep.
Yeah.
Man, so I'm going to rewind half a question and do a spin-off question. I am surprised, because it's not Gwent, but I am surprised there's not a Witcher universe, like, miniatures game yet.
How coming much? 2024, Steamforge Games.
Fair. There was a board game that Fantasy Flight released, so that I could see definitely fucking coming. But, like having Nilfgaard and Northern Realms and Skellige, like, armies, and, like, you think, like, Warhammer Fantasy style, like, the magic of having, like, your sorceress or sorcerer on the table throwing out fireballs and lightning and shit that gets all crazy, like, that's a big part of it. And with how popular the game is and now the TV show, I'm
really surprised.
Yeah, this
does feel like a Fantasy Flight product. So, coming soon from Atomic Mass Games.
All
right. Well, yeah, I don't want all my sculpts to look like Yennefer before. But I don't know. If there is a company,
I have significantly more faith in Asmodee and Atomic Mass than I do in Steamforge.
Yeah, but if I had to pick a British company to take over to run a Witcher board or a miniature game, I would honestly pick Games Workshop.
Well, sure. I mean, if you had your choice of, you know, pick a miniatures game company to do X, if the answer is, I mean, the question isn't write rules, the answer is GW.
Well, yeah. Isn't there rules for Lord of the Rings halfway decent though? I honestly haven't played it at all.
I can't speak to it.
Yeah. Lord of the Rings is probably mechanically the best game GW has put out, but, like, it was
there
also... Yep.
Take those rules, slap some Witcher paint on it, bing, bang, bomb.
Actually, that would... The original Lord of the Rings rules are actually good, so...
I mean, they can write rules. They usually just do...
Don't.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Zap it.
Grumble.
All right, this one, this could be tricky. If Nicolas Cage became the new leader of the free world and forced you to rate his top three movies, either acting or voice acting, what would they be?
Well, obviously Face Off is like one of his best movies of all time. Did you see the picture of John Travolta? Or was it Nick Cage wearing his mask out in public?
Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
Oh, Jim from the chat mentions Mordheim rules for The Witcher. So you can run around with warbands.
Oh, yeah. So like, you can do warband cool. style, or you could do massive armies between the actual kingdoms. Like, both would be interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. So, Nick Cage movies?
What's the one where he dresses up and punches someone as a bear?
Yeah, so...
Ghost Rider?
Legitimate good film you have Leaving Las Vegas. There's a reason he won an Oscar for that, and that's the reminder that he actually can act when he wants to.
Oh, and Bad Lieutenant.
And he doesn't have to make rent.
Yeah.
Bad Lieutenant is a really good film, too. It's a fucked up film, but that's on the verge of his
Bad Lieutenant
crazy...
Port of Call New Orleans?
Yes.
Shoot him again, his soul is still dancing. Like, that fucking movie is just insane.
It's really good.
What about the movie where Nick Cage plays a Nick Cage? Is that one out yet?
Where Nick Cage plays Nick Cage?
Yeah.
Is that like a Jean-Claude Van Johnson thing?
Wait, you didn't? You've legitimately not heard of that one?
No.
Oh, hold on 1 second.
Somebody's not happy.
Okay, let me rewind. If there were three films, oh my god, because there's best in, like, if I could only take three on a desert island, right? Because Leaving Las Vegas is actually his best. Raising Arizona is one of my favorite films, and he's good in it. And then you got to go for a crazy, and I was tempted to go for something like Bad Lieutenant, but then, like, you got fucking Mandy, right? I'm going to go Mandy. I'm going to go with quality, and I think those are the three best films that he's been in. Leaving Las Vegas, Raising Arizona, and Mandy.
All right, Nathan. This is coming out in 2021, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Nicolas Cage plays a fictional version of Nicolas Cage. It's...
All right. Like,
A cash-strapped Nicolas Cage agrees to make a paid appearance at a billionaire superfan's birthday party, but is really an informant for the CIA, since the billionaire fan is a drug kingpin and gets cast in a Tarantino movie.
Sure.
Yeah, that is the IMDb summary.
I'll take it.
Starring Nicolas Cage, Pedro Pascal, and Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh my goodness, yes! I'll take all that shit!
I can't believe you don't like... Face Off. I love that movie so much.
It's
well. Hold on, Raising Arizona. How is that not in your ticket?
It was.
It was. Oh, okay.
It was Leaving Las Vegas, Raising Arizona, and Mandy.
Oh yeah, that.
Zappity.
Grumble.
Face Off.
Oh, the
what
Rock?
Is your favorite thing to do with War Table that is non-War Machine related?
Not installing it.
That's the thing I've done the most.
What's happening?
Yeah, I haven't messed around with War Table. I guess that's probably easier to play games with other people with that. But I just don't like... I like face-to-face gameplay. And playing it over online, I guess it... Yeah, I don't know.
It is an imitation of the real thing, for better or worse. Like,
mm-hmm.
It is a shadow reflection, like...
Yeah.
It's the same thing as me playing Warcaster on tabletop. You know, like, it's functional, it works, it adds an hour to 2 hours per game, and is really clunky, and the instant I can safely play people in person, I will do that and never go back. But, like, it is a tool to be used during the current time, because, you know, the other option is an MMO. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't messed with it. I just like that personal interaction more. Even Blood Bowl, like, playing online, it feels like your opponent could just be an ass to be an ass. I think Tabletop Simulator has got less of that possibility, but, yeah.
Yeah, Tabletop Simulator I've used more, and other things like Board Game Arena and whatnot I've used more, but I just have not used War Table at all.
Oh, that's sorry. All right, sorry.
All right, next question. What do you think the boss of Riot Quest Winter Wasteland will be?
We actually went back and checked, because there were hints about this before. What was it, back in like March or something that they said that? Where did we find that fucking...
There's a Kickstarter comment from Matt Wilson saying...
It was Matt Wilson.
Could be Karchev.
Maybe we'll be hearing more from that Karchev fellow, which would be nice because, man, I was always sad back when I actually cared about the fluff in War Machine, like, read it in the books and stuff. Like, when books came out. Remember when books came out back in, like, Mark II, and there'd be fluff in them and everything? And when Crix got their hands on Karchev and Denny just ripped him out of the armor, I was so excited about Deathjack 2, Karchev 2 being a Crix Warcaster.
You mean the story then where Denny tried to seduce him and he just tried to blow up?
Yeah.
that's one thing you don't do is just talk to Karchev, because all he does is just angry explosions.
But yeah, I was hopeful that Karchev would be, because this was before Sturgis even, so I was excited for Karchev to be the first Warcaster who was from one faction and then died and then became a Crix Warcaster after being resurrected, because it's right there as a game mechanic, right? Like, and they did it eventually with some random schmuck who did it all in one book, so nobody gave a fuck. But if they'd done it with Karchev and had him be Karchev 2, the Crix Warcaster in the Deathjack, oh my god, I never would have stopped ejaculating.
I think that's more of a possibility now of something like that happening, especially with like Gorshade 4 is a Retribution caster. And, yep.
Zapata.
Zapity.
What is Gwent and why should we all play it?
It's the best free-to-play card game on the Webertubes.
That is true.
Followed by Hearthstone.
I don't know. Someone did some numbers. But the latest Hearthstone expansion, you can spend $2,000 and not be guaranteed to get all the cards.
Yeah, it's also Activision.
It's also the most generous free-to-play game of any kind. Like, Gwent just throws the shit at you. Like,
yeah, so we have an expansion coming out in a week. I have 107 free packs of cards saved up for it. And that's cost me maybe $10 in Journey Boost just because, like, I took a week off. And I wanted to catch up to where I needed to be. But, like, I have $107 worth of free cards waiting for me on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's obscenely generous.
And I've played enough, so I'm guaranteed at least two uncommon or greater rarity cards per pack.
I mean, it's the way to go for, like, something that's for free there. You play it enough, at least for me, I'm going to put money to them. Like, I'm going to buy some packs. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to support them because they make a game that's fun to me.
Yeah, I throw a little bit of money, but, like, I've quit so many mobile games because, like, I feel like they've just set the hook and then started pulling. This one, I see the merit in giving them money from time to time, but I don't feel like I have to keep up.
Yeah, and CDPR has been really open about the fact that they do not do Gwent to make money. They do Gwent because they have extra money lying around. Gwent self-sustains. It isn't a profit maker for them because they make enough money off of The Witcher and Cyberpunk and shit like that. Like, they get a little bit out of it, you know? It's like they're not doing it out of charity, but they're not, like, desperately trying to eke every dollar out of people because they don't have to.
Yeah, and it shows. I mean, like, yeah. I am rank 5 now, I think. So I'm closing in on pro rank, and yeah, I've spent less on this game total than I spent, I think, the worst month when I was playing Galaxy of Heroes.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, it works out well, because like you said, you're more likely to just throw them money. You know, if I have to give you $20 to be competitive, I'm going to be pissed about it, and maybe I'll give you the 20, and then I'm going to stop the next time you ask me for 20, because I'll say, fuck this game. If I don't have to spend a dollar, I'll throw you money every once in a while. Like, I've probably given Gwent $100 in random cosmetics and journeys and shit, but it felt like less because I never had to. Right?
Exactly.
Just like, you know, I've enjoyed this game. Here's some money. You know, I've been playing this for like 3 years, and I've chosen to splurge a little as opposed to needed to be competitive. And generosity aside, the elevator pitch is the two things that kind of set it apart from other card games is that it's a 3-round structure where it's first to 2 rounds, so there's kind of an ebb and flow where you can lose a round tactically to give you an advantage in the next round. And there's no face damage. There's no, like, you know, you have hit points. It's all about the value of the cards on the table. Both of which are very unique mechanics that I enjoy.
It's kept your attention for this long, so, I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's kept me, Nathan, and Brian interested in, what, for over a year now?
Yeah.
I think the biggest one is that Brian is still interested in it.
For Brian, so for me, it was an interested again because I loved it, but I just couldn't get, like, I stopped playing for like a year because it was PC only, and then when it came back on the phone, I was just waiting for the phone release, and once it was back on the phone, I was right back in, and the same thing with Brian. Brian had stopped playing around the same time as me, and then when it became a phone game, not just a PC game, we both were just...
Well, and in fairness, this is Gwent version 2, and it is objectively better than Gwent 1.
Yeah, yeah. It went through a rocky transition, you know, where, like, when it first changed, they were feeling out the new version. But the current version of Gwent is the best it's ever been.
Mm-hmm. So, Zapid.
Grumble.
Did you get a copy?
Also, fucking art, by the way. I'm sorry. I know we Zappity grumbled, but the fucking art.
The art is very good.
It's goddamn amazing. You know, oh, my Lord. Okay, sorry. But the fucking art.
Yep. Did you get a copy of New Blood Bowl, and which team will you try first?
I did get a copy of Blood Bowl earlier in this podcast. I opened the box. I mean, I obviously would probably
Dwarves.
Just play... No, I actually, my first team ever for Blood Bowl is Undead.
I always played true. Undead. Don't you like the Khemri ones?
I did like the Khemri, but they're not in this one.
I was say, isn't Khemri dead?
Kind of. They have like a PDF for the Teams of Renown, which I think are... They'll come out with, like, a Death Zone or something like that for this here.
But I mean, isn't like Temri completely dead in GW fluff in general?
I think in fantasy, but they have the old world old world storylines that they're going to start coming out with soon.
You have the first team I remember seeing you play. It was on the digital version because when we first started to know each other was your like skink army where they were all named after Mexican foods.
Yeah, taco and burrito and yeah, it was all horrible. It was just horribly racist names. Not racist.
I mean, the concept of a taco isn't inherently racist. It's not like you painted them all with like sombreros and little mustaches like Speedy Gonzales or anything.
Yeah, I did have a fat skink though, and when I actually modeled the miniatures, the fat skink had he was like big and chunky, and then he was running around with a McDonald's cup.
My favorite, and I never saw it in person. I've only heard legends of it, but my favorite Blood Bowl team is still Jim's Wild Stallions. Do you have the Wild Stallions?
I own them, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I need to see them in person. Because the theory with them, Dan, I don't know if you've heard this story or listeners, whatever. Their main unit is the Beastmen, and the models were holding axes. And so when he removed the axes, it looked like they were playing air guitar because of where their hands were. So then he had the Chaos Warriors be Bill Ted, Robot Bill, Robot Ted. The Minotaur was Station, and then all the Beastmen were like Socrates, Napoleon, Genghis Khan, etc. It was the whole crew, and that's fucking amazing.
Yep.
Very nice. Zapata.
Crumble.
What's currently on your painting table?
Fuck ton of Warcaster. I mean, it's not going to get painted, but it's on the table.
Yeah.
I actually have some models I need to paint for a company. Some Firefly models. Those are on my... They're chibi versions of the entire cast of Firefly. And I need to paint them. Let's see if I can pull adorable. One of them out. Oh, they look adorable. They're really tiny, so hopefully it won't take me very long to do them. There's River. There's
I believe in you.
Shepherd. There, I'll pull up Malcolm Reynolds and put him up to the camera.
You know what's on Dan's painting table? A cat.
Yep, probably.
He got up right now. He's been up here several times.
What's no longer on the painting table? The models.
Yeah, they may have fallen. It's fine. They bounce.
It's not going to show. But it's...
Is that a little Simon?
No, it's actually...
That's Malcolm. Yeah, that's Malcolm. Okay.
Yeah.
But they are really tiny, and it's Impact Miniatures. They do awesome chibi models. They're beautiful. Hopefully it won't take me too long. But I have like
just a couple of years.
8 models to paint.
All I can say, Andy, is I'm once again sad that I lost the password recovery information for Exelon Texas.
I get birthday announcements for him.
Because I tried to get back into that account, but it won't let me.
Do you have to prove that you're Exelon Texas by like saying?
Well, I can't remember what I used for a password because it's been a decade, and I don't remember what email address I signed up with for that account, so I can't get back into it.
No.
And I don't want to spend like the $25 to find some Russian hacker to get me into it, so. Because I'm sure it's a terrible password that they can probably hack. But.
What about lightness?
Oh.
Zappity.
How is your Thanksgiving?
Zappity? Just cut it off immediately, my Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving sucked.
I sous-vide'd my turkey and it turned out rather well. I was surprised. And I learned some, so it should be even better next time.
We just got a ton of Indian takeout food, so I got the Thanksgiving effect, but
yeah, your punk ass is near to Amber, so.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Fuck you.
I ate that all weekend.
Amber's so good.
My Thanksgiving I put off until Friday when I could get a Rocky Rococo's pizza.
Why would you do that to yourself?
Rocky Rococo.
I mean, he was already hating life, so he just made it official.
Get a Little Caesars deep dish. It's better in every way.
Every so often you want to just eat Rockies because you know what you're getting into. Sometimes you just accept it.
Eat a Little Caesars pizza and then drink a gallon of grease, and you've had a Rockies pizza.
I don't know. I like Little Caesars deep dish pizzas, but they don't have the sausage that... And if Carnage was... Or if Brian was watching this, he would agree with me entirely. The sausage at...
Yeah, if I could get Rocky's sausage on a Little Caesars pizza, that would be amazing.
But I got their triple, it was like a pepperoni sausage and some like weird other sausage, and that was really good. I just haven't had it in like years,
Every so often I will go to Rocky's and just get some slices and go, after I'd be reminded of why I don't eat Rocky's anymore. But
after you dip your napkin into the grease about 20 times in order to get it out.
I mean, when I do it, I go full out, so I get the breadsticks and the cheese, and it's one of those things where it's like, this is a 1,700 calorie meal, and I hate myself afterwards, but...
It's still
better. But Rocky looks kind of like Leon Redbone, so that makes everything okay.
And Rocky's is better than frickin' Pizza Hut, anyway.
Well, sure.
Part of my problem is, too, one of my friends in high school worked at the Rockies in Watertown, so he would bring us food after... they closed for the night. So, my entire senior year of college, just every night at, 9:30, we'd be eating, three pieces of Rocky pizza.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like the horror that I went through when I used to live with Brian back in the 1900s. I worked at the Cinnabon. Or I worked at a movie theater, and we would trade leftover popcorn for Cinnabons. And that's basically what Brian and I and a couple other friends survived on for 6 months, was just Cinnabons. And I can't eat a Cinnabon anymore. I could probably do it, but I might hate myself. Proper Thanksgiving, I had spiral macaroni and cheese. That was my actual Thanksgiving dinner. Because fuck the pandemic, I can't go anywhere. Meh.
Good stuff.
Yep.
Zapata.
Grumble!
Final question. What is your favorite thing to do with models in this non-gaming time?
Assemble. That's basically about it. I've been assembling...
I'll be completely honest, I have half my ISA army sitting on my work desk, and it usually ends up holding my iPad up during these work days. So I guess Gwent holder.
Yeah, I've been. This pandemic has caused me not to spend money on shit things that I do every day. You know, like getting energy drinks and spending $10-$15 every morning at the gas station picking up shit while I go to work. So I have been doing that a lot. So I'm finding myself having a lot more money. So I've just been spending it all on Flying Frog, Shadows of Brimstone stuff. So,
I have a room full of board games and miniatures that I never even go in right now. There's that door behind me through the open door across the hall. It's sad and neglected and forgotten and full of cobwebs and spelunkers.
Somebody is asking in chat. Well, I guess, yeah. That's what we're doing with miniatures.
Yep, Zappity.
Grumble. I got one from chat. It's Jim is asking, what is the best dog in War Machine and Hordes? First by model, then by rules.
Does Scrapjack count?
Is he a dog?
I mean, he's basically her pet dog.
He's walking on two legs.
He's a good boy. He's a good boy.
Is he?
Well, you know, he's... Okay, the one that actually is a dog, mentally, behaviorally and everything, that I'm... Come on, Rosinante has to count, right? He's like the family pet.
I would count Rosinante more than Scrapjack.
I would too. I mean, we know more about Rosinante's personality than we do know about Scrapjack's. Except for he's just a murderous dog.
Scrapjack is filled and powered by the, sacrificed children, so...
Aren't dogs?
No.
I mean, just the butcher
ones, kind of, like junkyard dogs, like chopper sick balls style. See, that's the thing is, like, Scrapjack is a chopper sick balls junkyard dog, and Rocinante is more like the dog from the Sandlot, where he's scary and dangerous, but once you get to know him, he's actually pretty lovable. And Nathan saw it on a drive-through screen, so when the dog jumped over the camera, its penis was 30 feet long.
It was like seeing, you know, the Watchmen over on Ultra Screen.
It not was like that.
Not Ultra Screen, but...
IMAX.
IMAX.
I saw the Sandlot and Super Mario Brothers as a double feature at a drive-in theater. And the most... Yeah, yeah.
That was...
Traumatic day. Dramatic day in my life as a child. A terrible movie and a 30-foot dog dick.
My parents went to go see The Shining when I was really tiny, and I do remember parts of it. Because I was in the back seat supposed to be asleep, and I was not asleep.
You had bad movie experiences as a child.
Might explain a few things. Conan the Barbarian is one of my favorite movies of all time, though.
Mm-hmm. That's just because you enjoy watching someone punch a horse.
It's a camel.
No, yeah, it's a camel, yeah. The horse is in Blazing Saddles.
Oh, wait, that one's suplexed, yeah.
No, well, the suplex horse is in Rock, the Rock version of Hercules.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
The punching of the horse is in Blazing Saddles. Man, I know a lot of animal abuse in movies.
I mean, I guess it's got to be isn't it like by default the Cador guard dog? What the hell else is there as far as actual dogs?
There's the Arguses that hang around with Butcher 3.
Oh, yeah. There's Arguses.
There's Laris. That's Kaya's little doggy. Any other dogs?
I'm going to go with War Game Girl's pet dog that she made a Kador battle dog costume for.
I'm going to go with my troll blood whelp calf that I never finished. But I have one model that's proof of concept. I had a bunch of troll bloods or whelps that were mounted up on Kador guard dogs.
My feline lawyer has told me that I should say it's Gibbs Cat.
Gibbs Cat. I guess Jim mentions that in chat that there's a patrol dog as well for Signar. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't have a name. Sure. He's just a trench dog. Meh.
There's Stubbs the monkey. That's like a dog.
Stubbs is not a...
It's, you know, yeah.
I mean, come on, Nathan, be nice. He's from New Jersey. It's not his fault.
I mean, somewhere in there was just like, you know, like Calandra's quite a dog or some like, you know, reference like that. But that's just misogynistic, so I'm not going to go there.
You did, though. You.
No, I didn't. By saying you don't say it, it doesn't count as saying it. That's how Donald Trump has never said anything mean about anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Zappity?
Crumble.
A lot of people are saying it. I'm not saying it, but a lot of people are saying it. But here's mostly the thing that I'm not saying. Yeah.
Sure. And the last question looks like, is getting into Mordheim or a similar kind of game a good idea? I guess I'd probably be one to answer this. So, I mean, if you like customizing your forces and doing like an experience-driven campaign-style game, yes.
Well, I'd say first ask yourself, do I have a group of people who all want to play this for the same reason?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer is yes, then Mordheim is an amazing game.
Frostgrave is a good one.
If the answer is no, it's going to be painful.
Yeah. Frostgrave, like any game that style. But yeah, I mean, getting into anything is great if you have a group of friends who will do it with you.
Yeah. And definitely doing Mordheim, if you're playing with friends, you're probably not going to be min-maxing your forces out to absolutely eliminate others.
And that I don't know, I played with the Markgraf brothers.
I mean, that was the only reason why I had a hard time with Mordheim in our local game store league is that there was a lot of tryhards in it, and playing against a tryhard in a kind of a beer and pretzels type game is not as fun.
No. So
playing with friends is always usually the best. Yep. And if you're all tryhards, then that's perfectly fine.
Exactly. Like I said, as long as everyone's in it for the same reason, Mordheim is a good game. If two different philosophies try and get together and play, someone is going to be real, real sad when the Dark Elf player shows up.
No, it's the Shadow Elves.
Shadow Elves were the broken ones. Yep.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Life is terrible and we're all going to die. If it brings you joy and doesn't hurt somebody else, do it.
Yeah.
Eat Arby's.
I mean, that's always going to be in my advice.
Yeah.
All right. Zapata.
Grumble.
Recommendations.
I didn't see any tweets. Recommendations? Well, I'm going to recommend a game that we've been pretty much addicted to since pretty much our last podcast.
Gwent?
I don't know if we've actually mentioned
it.
And
he's recommending Gwent, finally!
I don't think we've actually mentioned it as a game that we play, but Dead by Daylight.
We mentioned Gwent.
Dead by Daylight, not Gwent.
Oh. Nah, we're done with that.
Are you?
No. I want to be playing it right now, but you're still talking.
Yeah, I know. Brian invited us like about three times now already.
I told him it was raid day.
But yeah, Dead by Daylight. It's a simple mechanic, but has a lot of strategy to it. It rewards you if you're good, and it can reward you if you're bad too.
I mean, again, it's just don't take things too seriously. It is the asymmetric 4-1. One person plays a killer, the other four people are survivors trying not to be killed, and you know you play the game. A bunch of ass. Don't play as killer if you get angry, because survivors are the worst people on the planet, and you're going to want to dox these people and hunt them down and cut their legs off.
You're going to want to be a real killer.
Yes. Yeah.
How have you guys survived playing with Brian?
Well, we just play Survivor and just don't care. Like, that's the problem is, when you're playing Survivor, the worst thing that happens, and the killer is a bit like, he'll get angry, he gets mad at you, he'll catch you, and he'll put you on the hook, and then he'll camp you, because he's like, fuck you, you're gonna die. And then he loses, because doing that is a surefire way to lose the killer. Whereas survivors, like, if they're bullying you, they'll be twerking up and down, there's four of them, and they can make you fucking cry. And it is just demoralizing, and so I try to always be a nice person as a survivor, because I know that all the rando survivors out there are salty fucking asshole bullies, and I try to not play killer because all of the survivors out there are salty asshole bullies. In fact, my last like 2 weeks, whenever I play killer, I just play cooperative. I try to communicate to the survivors that I'm not trying to kill any of them, and like, you know, I just need to like stab four of you in this game to get my daily, and now you can go do everything and get all the points. Wasn't that fun?
I mean, there's some funny narratives that can happen too. I think we had a narrative where, I think it was you and I, Nathan, were left in the game, and there was a killer that just kept on punching a generator to get you to work on it for him.
Yeah, yeah. They do that. Oh, actually, Brian and I yesterday, and Nigel, I don't remember. We were playing, and we play the whole game, and we never see the killer, and we never hear a terror radius. So I'm like, where the fuck is this killer? We finish the generator, and at one point during the game, we see in the HUD that somebody got injured. I'm like, okay, so somebody got injured by the killer, but there's no fucking killer on this map. I've run around, and I cannot hear a killer anyway. So finally, I'm like, well, it has to be a level one Michael Myers, because he's the only killer that doesn't have a terror radius, so you don't know where he is, because he stalks you. So we finally found him, and what it was is he was just standing and staring at one of his totems. So he has a lit totem that is just, he parked his character in front of it, and he's just staring at it, and if you walked between him and the totem, he would just stab you, and then you would just run away, and he would continue to stare at his totem. That's all he did the whole fucking game. You know, made him happy.
Yeah, it's a cheap game. It's, I think, like $20 on Steam. It goes on sale a lot. Mm-hmm. The expansions on it, as we're talking about before, is like a company I don't... Their expansions are super cheap, so it doesn't feel like I gave them, you know, $80 of my money to buy everything for them.
Although, but if you buy every expansion, you did give them $80 of your money, but you can nickel and dime. Like, oh, I just want, you know, I'm a big fan of Friday the 13th. Freddy Krueger, he's $4. Whoop-de-fuck, you know? Yep. Actually, no, because he comes with a survivor, so I think he's $7. But whatever. Like, each individual thing, like, oh, I like Silent Hill. I want to play as Pyramid Head. Boom, here's $7. Yeah. You like Michael Myers and Laurie Strode? You know, you can just nickel and dime them. And the maps aren't gated behind that, so everybody gets to play on all the maps. And you can play against all the killers and survivors. They aren't, like, segregated. So you can get the full experience. You can always play against a Michael Myers without spending a nickel.
Yeah. And that's the worst experience, though, too. Not the worst experience, but it is fucking creepy because, again, what Nathan said is Michael Myers, as the killer gets closer to you, you can usually hear their heartbeat or you hear, like, them coming. Michael Myers has none of that. So you'll be working on a generator and you look around and then you just see Michael Myers, like, standing behind a bush just staring at you the entire time. Like, holy shit!
I love that they managed to get the game mechanic for Michael where his special power is to stare at you. Like, that's legit his power, and it's really fucking strong. You're like, oh, Jesus! He's staring at me! We're all gonna die!
What was that map that we were all stuck in the bathroom?
Oh, yeah.
And I was
just in the door of the bathroom just staring at you and I. Just like, please just let us leave, Mr. Myers!
Yeah.
It's good.
Overall, I mean, it's a simplistic game. Obviously, the easiest... The survivors, they just have to start up 5 generators or be the last survivor and escape the hatch. And then Killer is obviously supposed to, you know, hook all of them.
The Killer's gameplay is in the name.
Yep.
And it's although I guess the survivor's gameplay is in the name too, but they don't call them repairmen. Because that's what they really
fair
are.
Enough, yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, no, it's a great little game. We play it on Steam. It is cross-play, so you can play it on your Xbox, I think PS4.
Mm-hmm.
I think Switch is even on it now, too.
Yeah. So it's on fucking mobile, although mobile doesn't cross-play, but they have a mobile version that's the full game.
Wow.
It's not like a dumbed-down version. Like, I was watching Ots play today. He was running around as the Plague on Cold Winter Farms the whole fucking game against a Bill and a Dwight and a Steve. Like, it was what it was.
Hmm. Yep.
Nice.
It's worth it.
It's freaking... I recommend the 2D20 RPG line. So everybody likes the role-playing games is, and, you know, did you know that there's ones out there that aren't Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition? It's true. They exist. Modiphius has the 2D20 system line. That's a really cool system. I won't go too in-depth into how it works, but what is neat is that core system they have throughout several different games. There's a Conan the Barbarian one, there's a John Carter one, there's Star Trek, there's Fallout, the Dune one is coming out next year, and these games all have that same core mechanic with just slight tweaks that help to fit the mythos and the feel of the particular thing. So it's a really cool way to learn, like, one system but have a lot of options with your playgroup, whether you want to do sword and sorcery or whether you want to do post-apocalyptic or whether you want to do Dune, which is super post-apocalyptic, I guess. I don't know. Did capitalism count as an apocalypse? Probably. But they're a lot of fun. It's a pretty simple system. I do like that it's very... the main mechanic that they have in it is called momentum, that the boil-down point is if you get extra successes on your check, your friends can use those extra successes on their checks, which I like the storytelling aspect of that, because if Chewbacca rips somebody's arms off really, really well, Han Solo is going to have a bonus to telling that guy's friends to surrender, and that makes sense within the game, that you can use these disparate successes on different skill checks, and it's just a lot of fun. So, you know, if you're looking for an RPG and you're sick of D&D or you just want to try something else, check out the 2D20s. One of those franchises will interest you.
Yeah, Fallout is a very storied one.
Fallout's good. I have all the Conan ones. I'm looking forward to Dune. And as our group, like, I own Conan, Brian owns Fallout, I'm gonna own Dune, like, basically we're gonna own the entire line. At some point we can just all, you know, memorize the rules and we'll have just the fucking world open to us as far as games to play.
Very nice. Alright. I have two recommendations that are both smaller. One, since we haven't podcasted since the end of October, if you aren't watching Season 2 of The Mandalorian, you're wrong and you should watch Season 2 of The Mandalorian.
But the one has horns that aren't as big as their characterized version of them in a very...
I have three recommendations. One is watch Season 2 of The Mandalorian. Two is punch a Star Wars fan. They probably deserve it.
Oh, my God. So,
especially
yeah.
If they're on the internet. Like, I include myself in that, but, like, the worst part about Star Wars fandom is the fans, by a significant margin.
The people complain about Ahsoka. Spoiler character is just stupid. And they didn't complain about Dooku. I mean, come on.
So here's a different complaint about that character. So two episodes ago, there was a character from the TV show where they had the voice actress physically play the character as well in Mandalorian. Now, last episode, they had a character from the show whose voice actress has previously cosplayed as that character, and they're just like, nah, fuck you, we're going with Rosario Dawson. And it's like, hey, come on now, that's rude.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Rosario Dawson's great, but it was just a little like, wow, that seems cold-hearted.
Maybe they couldn't reach a deal or something, but...
Yeah.
Mandalorian's doing all right.
Yeah. And then finally, somehow in the last week, after months and months of nothing, there are now, I think, 4 Warcaster podcasts that have popped up, which is kind of nice to actually have something to listen to. And since they managed to call us out, I'm going to return the favor. So go listen to the Hyper. God damn it. In true Crippled Session fashion, I have now forgotten their name for a moment.
I think I just set them up on Muse's feed, mm-hmm. potentially.
They are.
Let's edit all of this out.
Yeah.
No, we won't.
Lance.
Just like us, they do not edit. The Hyper News Network.
Oh.
Who apparently we gave a shout out to them back on episode 312 because they are the people from Gopher Mafia Games in Illinois.
Oh.
I do not remember giving them a shout out or listening to that. I don't remember. Episode over the summer or not, but they listen to us. And I have to say, I'm happy to hear that there's now an equivalent to Crippled System in space. Like,
once the quarantine's over and we start actually playing Warcaster, maybe we'll start talking about it some more.
Yep.
Yeah, that's mainly the reason I haven't talked about it that much.
Like I said, it's just fun because they're approaching things the same way Crippled System did when we started out, where it was. We're a bunch of people who are playing this game. Let's talk about our experiences about it every week. And, like, they fully admit that they're just learning, but they're like, we enjoy this game and we enjoy hanging out, so let's hang out and talk about this game on air.
Oh, sure. So.
Yep, Wargamers Gaming, or Wargamers Just Talking
yep.
Gaming. That's basically what we've always been. Awesome.
Sweet.
And I brought back the Buseys, so you guys should be happy about that.
I have a burb now.
I mean, that was a mistake.
Yeah. The funny thing is that Raylene talked me into letting her get a bird. But since I'm home all day, the bird sits here and it's bonded with me. Like, it'll perch on my finger now. It doesn't know who she is. So now I have a bird.
Yep.
It was supposed to be hers. It's like the whole thing where, like, you know, dad, stereotypically, they tell the family that they can't get a dog, and then they get a dog, and then, of course, the dad and the dog, you know, are inseparable.
Well, yeah, I've seen that with cats more often, though. I hate cats, I can't stand cats. And then there's, next time you see a picture of dad's asleep on the couch.
Cat. Yeah, and there's a cat perched.
Perched on his shoulder or sleeping on his chest, yeah.
The one I saw with that is dad says we can't get hobbits, and the next one is dad with the hobbits, and it's Boromir wrestling with all the hobbits in the snow.
But yeah, birds are evil. I don't know why you did that.
Birds are all right.
I don't know. I hate the smell of bird poop. Plus, birds live like 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unless something were to happen to this bird, it is likely going to live until I'm like 70.
I mean, larger birds, I think, are better off. It's all the small, chirpy ones are the ones I really don't like. I hate parakeets. Can't stand them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, having a parrot or a macaw sounds like the absolute worst, because they're intelligent, and they know how to pick locks, and they will just swear at you while they're doing it.
It is amazing the redundancies on this cage door. Like, it is definitely designed with that in mind. You don't have to do that shit with, like, a dog kennel. You know, you just put a twist tie across the front, you're done. But this,
I mean, hell, my dog, like, when we shut Tally in there, like, we've accidentally not latched it, and she won't try it for 3 hours.
Really?
She'll just sit in there and look at us.
Kai is gigantic, but the concept of a barrier just stops her. We can put like a 6-inch plank of wood across a doorway, and she could just walk over it, but she won't. She'll stand on the other side of the plank of wood just staring at us, crying.
It reminds me of when my old roommate's birds would actually get out of the cage. One of his stupid parakeets, pretty not smart. He only knew one direction in flight, and that was just straight ahead.
Yeah.
And so there was
going to be a wall.
There was nothing to stop it except for it would just fly straight into a wall and then scrape all the way down to the ground and then recover and then fly another way and then into a wall. Yeah.
I'm just picturing Loki sitting there being like, come on, come on.
He was not part of the family then, unfortunately.
Raylene had a parakeet when we first started dating, and then it, oh my god, the fucking, oh, it was the hot dogs and the bun situation, because, or the chips and salsa, where you never run out of both of them at the same time, because she had one parakeet, but they're social animals, so you have to get a second so that they can keep each other company, so you get a second parakeet, and then the first parakeet died, so now you have one parakeet again, so it's lonely, so you have to get another parakeet, so you get that parakeet, but then the second parakeet, which is now the first parakeet, it dies, so you're stuck with a parakeet. We had like 5 fucking parakeets. Before finally one died, and before we could buy another one, the other one died also.
I mean, that's called rat poison, but...
Well, it was... The first one was natural death. The second one escaped the cage and met a cat.
Oh.
So it was a legitimately an accident. It's not like I planned it, but I have to admit, it's the least sad I've been when a pet died. I still wasn't happy, but it's the least sad, because I'm like, oh, that's a shame, but at least we don't have to have another fucking parakeet.
You just
she taught you.
You just chopped that circle. You took a slice out of that circle of life.
Yeah. All right.
My feline lawyer says we should hang up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, folks, for listening. Hopefully, we'll get the audio version of this out soon.
All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
I'm about to go get chased by a conjoined twin.